Thank you very much. Today, the staff will present Agenda Paper 4A and Agenda Paper 4B. Agenda Paper 4A is a summary of decisions to date, and I don't intend to discuss any further. Agenda Paper 4B, the target profile. There are three questions for the board in this paper. Agenda Paper 4B discusses the target profile, what it is, and how it is determined. The paper also discusses the time horizon for the target profile, in addition to some requirements for consistency between the asset and target profiles. As agreed in December, the staff are building the core model in stages, and as such, the board may find some additional context regarding next steps helpful when considering this paper. In the April board meeting, staff intend to discuss qualifying criteria for items within the target profile, how the dynamic nature of portfolios will impact the target profile, and finally, the dynamic interaction of the asset and target profiles together. Moving on to the paper in question, I will provide an overview of the paper in totality and then ask the board the questions in the paper in sequential order. I will provide a brief introduction for each question. Paragraphs 6 through 23 discuss the target profile, what it is, and how it is determined. The preliminary staff view is summarized in paragraphs 24 and 25. As stated in paragraph 24, the target profile represents the objective that management worked towards achieving for a given asset profile. The determination of the target profile should take into account the entity's risk management strategy, which in turn is influenced by the contractual tenor of financial liabilities where present, and risk management strategy where core deposits are present. While the model will not mandate the use of a particular risk management strategy, the staff have highlighted two potential strategies in paragraph 22. Those strategies are to stabilize the net of interest income and interest expense on an undiscounted basis, or conversely, to stabilize on a discounted basis. The other point the staff would like to highlight is in paragraph 19, where we demonstrate how the model will incorporate core deposits and specifically treat them as if they were a fixed-rate financial liability with a specified tenor. Paragraphs 26 through 30 compare the asset and target profiles in two dimensions. Firstly, notional, i.e. size, and secondly, tenor, the amount of time until repricing occurs. The staff preliminary view is summarized in paragraph 31 and states there should be consistency of notionals, but not necessarily of tenors, between the asset and target profile. Paragraphs 32 through 39 discuss the time horizon for the target profile and explain why there may not be a practical or economic reason to define the time horizon longer than the tenor of the entity's financial liabilities. While the model will not mandate a time horizon, the model should reflect the time period over which the entity is managing the net of interest income and interest expense, as stated in paragraph 40. Paragraphs 41 through the end of the paper discuss laddering and other matters. Laddering is a common strategy where core deposits are present. It will be useful to understand laddering before discussing the dynamic nature. This section also highlights some other matters that will require future discussion as we develop the core model. As such, moving on to the questions. Question 1 focuses on the target profile, what it is, and how it is determined. The question to the board is, does the board agree with the preliminary staff view in paragraphs 24 and 25 that the target profile should represent the objective that management is working towards for a given asset profile?
So do you want us to try and focus our discussion on the paragraphs up to 25 and question 1?
Yes, please.
Even though you teed up the whole paper?
Yes, please.
Okay. Any comments in that context? Questions? Jim Chow?
Thank you. I generally agree with staff's recommendation. I just have two observations with regard to paragraph 24. One is that 24 said that when we determine the target profile, should it take into account of entity's risk management strategy, which in turn influenced by two elements or two factors. My question is whether we only need to consider these two elements or two factors, or whether there are other elements or factors should be considered, or whether there are any other factors or elements will have influence on entities' risk management strategy. because sometimes when we are looking at or determining the entity's risk management strategy, we always think about following elements such as the amount of the financial liabilities, and then the term, and then the interest rate of those financial liabilities, and also interest rate structure, and also the structure of the liabilities, those elements. So I'm wondering whether any other factors or elements also should be considered. The second question about some wording clarification. A, we mentioned the contractual tenor of financial liability. I'm not sure whether it's specifically referenced to contractual term. Yeah, so maybe term is easier to be understood. And the B, we mentioned that the risk structure, risk management structure, when core deposits are present, it seems that we circle around of the expression, because we say that this risk management strategy, when core deposits are present, have influence of entities' risk management structure. There are two risk management structures circle around. So my I'm thinking that the intention is actually we're trying to say that the structure of the deposit and the and what especially the core deposits and what the entity do to those deposits have influence on entity's risk management structure. So maybe I think this kind of wording could be further clarified.
So I'll start with your last comment there. I would agree probably to say the risk management strategy is influenced by the risk management strategy is a bit circular. So we probably, you're quite right, I think we're trying to make a comment that the entity's approach to core deposits, as we discussed, is perhaps what we're trying to say there. So we should perhaps be a bit more specific with wording. I would agree with that. On your first question there about should they consider other things, and I think you're quite right, the notional of the entity's financial liability should be considered as well. And I think as we've written this, we've said contractual tenor, which I think you could interpret that to just be the time horizon. So I think we should perhaps be more clarify that it would, I'm not saying it has to be just these two things. I don't think we've written that, but there will be other things that will be considered.
Whether they're fixed or floating and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
The term is a better word.
Yeah, contractual term is probably a better term.
Terms,
Terms is a better word.
Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Does that answer your first question also, Jinchang?
Yes, I think it's clear. Yep. Yeah, thank you.
Yep. Daryl?
paragraph 22. With the two different business models that you spoke about. I'm very, very comfortable with the business model you describe in A, which is, I think, the way we've been thinking about this all the way through the process. And business model may be the incorrect description here, but I'll use that as a label for the moment.
Yep.
B surprised me a little bit. It may be an element of unfamiliarity with that particular approach to doing things. But the more I went a bit around in circles with B, trying to figure out what the implications would be, what discount rates you could use for present value in the various cash flows and et cetera. To what extent are we going to be trying to tick the box for the B approach, or is this simply just listing that this is the way people do it, but we're going to continue regardless? And I think the other problem that I had with B is when I think about A is what's going to be on my income statement. B is not going to be what's on my income statement, because I don't think I record the present value of future interest flows on my income statement. So it feels like it brings a wrinkle in that I hadn't been thinking about. I'm just perhaps asking you how seriously we should be thinking about 22B.
Let me answer that question. Yeah, it's on. The reason why we have B is basically we've already got feedback that this is a strategy that is used. We will have to consider it, Daryl, based on the feedback already that's come in. Absolutely agree. Where the wrinkle comes in is the PV is there. I do my income statement effectively on a cash basis. But whenever I look at a PV, what this means is I have to put an additional swap in place to achieve this. It's the unwinding of that PV that they are targeting as well. So it's keeping stabilizing on a present value basis so that changes in interest rate is added back to stabilize the net interest margin. So it's a different concept. Yes, we will have to explore it, I think, going forward.
I mean, there are things like the core deposits, for example, with a 0% discount rate.
It adds a wrinkle, yes. It does add a wrinkle, but it is, how shall I put it, we were asked about it very clearly then.
Okay, I'm going to let myself in next.
That's right order.
So I've got one pedantic point, one observation, and one question. So my pedantic point first. So when I read 22A, I reacted not very well because a reference to cash margin sets off alarm bells for me, because surely we mean, I think I know what you mean, but I think we have to change our wording, because these are amortized cost items, so they have to be using the effective interest method.
Yep.
So there's no cash amounts going through P&L, I hope. But can we just find a way of expressing that differently so we don't, because, you know, we've just had a discussion at the Interpretations Committee sort of reinforcing the importance of the effective interest method and interest income line items. One observation, I think it's an observation, but just, so we talk a lot about net interest margin and their objective being, you know, to stabilise or whatever their objective is to do with net interest margin, which is driving it all, which I agree with. But to be clear, when we're talking about that, we're thinking about a very specific population made up of items that we discussed at the last meeting. So it's made up of items which are amortised cost items or and potentially fair value OCI when we get to that.
Yep.
It's not just everything they might want to be throwing into net interest margin. It's the things we've said can be in that population that we're asking them to focus on when they apply this model.
That's correct. Absolutely.
Can I just elaborate a little bit on this one? Absolutely. And Sue, one of the things, and I don't want to go too much into it in this paper because we don't have a paper on this. One, we have discussed are eligible items, what you're referring to. There's also another implication that will come in is what are eligible strategies that you can do with this, because it's not a dissimilar question. How shall I put it? Now we will elaborate on that, and it's there in the paper when we come to subsequent discussions on the things. It's been referred to as well. Is that the model has a certain objective, as you point out, that what we are trying to do through that model. There could be certain things that we need to discuss with the board to see if those strategies are within the scope of that objective or not. And that brings in a second layer. But, yes, it is certainly with the qualifying items.
Okay, that's helpful. I was sort of thinking of it from a slightly different perspective, although maybe not entirely unrelated, because I think sort of a consequence of what we're discussing is that we would be thinking about them managing these eligible items that are within net interest margin as we think of them, plus in addition the movements on these derivatives that end up being included within this model.
Yep.
Plus I guess hedging derivatives under normal hedge accounting.
Mm-hmm.
All of those items would be what we would be thinking of.
Yep.
But that may not be the same as what they're necessarily presenting as net interest margin in their financial statements.
Yes, yeah. Presentation is a different...
Those are two different, slightly different populations, and we might need to think about that at some point.
Absolutely.
And my question. So I agree with your sort of where you're heading and the question one in particular. One just thing out of interest, I don't know if it matters, but just one thing that struck me when I was reading this is that we talk ultimately about the asset profile. But the actual focus of their what they're looking at is really the net interest return. So it's net of the liabilities. So
yes,
they're trying to do something to transform their assets, taking into account the liabilities to get to a particular net profile. Given that, why are we focusing on the asset piece?
Well,
I don't know if it matters, but it just
it does
matter. Seems sort of indirect. I'm sure it does matter, but I'd be interested in why.
Well, we spent a fair amount of time discussing core deposits through the education phases. We spent a lot of time discussing that and highlighting the problem that the institutions are facing regarding perpetual rate funding and an asset profile, assets that really don't match that, so they have to do something else. And so I think that in this line of thinking, we said, well, it's probably easiest to describe that you have the liability profile, and you're quite clearly saying that the liabilities play a very large part in defining your target profile, that you're trying to transform the assets to achieve that objective there. So that's been the thinking as to why we've focused on the assets. I'm not sure that's a great answer.
Can I just try and see if I can articulate it slightly differently? what I was thinking about, so even when we do a normal cash flow hedge or anything, we create, when I'm saying I'm doing a normal cash flow hedge, I want to convert that variable rate bond into a fixed rate bond. That's what my objective is. That's what I'm trying to do. So inherently, as soon as I do that, we don't require it. Implicitly, that desire is my target profile. So, so that is effectively becomes the hypothetical that I'm doing, because that's what I'm trying to go for.
But in that case, it feels more directly that I want that asset to look like this.
Similarly,
whereas in this case,
this is where we will bring the combination together, where you will see is what this is going to do is that I have an asset profile which is based on what I can lend and do in the market, the cash basis. That's not the ideal, putting it simply in a single term. The bonds that I can buy in the market is not the ideal bonds I would like to have. What is the ideal bond or target that I would like to go for? That's what is created in the target profile. And that's the complexity is that here that is driven by the liability structure because I have to fund it. And that's where the funding comes in. And that's why these two have to come in. And I think now slowly coming as it goes, it's inevitable we are jumping ahead. The derivatives that are used to manage it is the difference between the target profile and the asset profile. Effectively, that's the hypo that we are building. So that's why both play a critical role, and this is where the interest expense comes in. So we will have to consider. The asset profile is the cash profile of what I have been able to buy, not what I would like to achieve. Ideally, that's my target profile, and that's informed by the liability side.
But I could have the identical assets and different liabilities, and I'd have a different strategy.
The target profile? Yes. And if they have identicals matching, you don't need to do anything. You're already matched.
Even though my assets are the same. So it is caused by the liability being different in that scenario.
Yeah, that's where the mismatch will come in.
And that is when we talk asset profile or target, taking into account the liability profile.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's a net view.
It's not net view.
You don't only look at assets.
Yeah.
That's what confuses me.
Yeah, it's confusing.
It's a net view. Confusing.
Yeah, it's a net view.
It has to be the net view. So one of the things as we go
on. Asset profile, given the liabilities.
Given the liabilities. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Mary.
Yeah, because derivative, eventually derivatives based on the net position.
It's a net position.
Mary?
My big question was the last question you asked. I was maybe in more baby speak in terms of saying, why are we focused on paragraph 13, for example, just talks about managing the assets, and it doesn't explain why we're focused only on the assets instead of the liabilities. And I think it's going to be important for us. And your answer was consistent with what I had expected, but I think it's going to be important for us in any consultation document to talk about this and explain it rather than just assuming. Because I think the question people have is, do you really mean I can only express my strategy in terms of assets? What if I say my assets are fixed and I'm managing the liability? And I don't know that – I don't think I have an answer to that. That other question, which leads me to a more general observation, which is I think we have to be clear whether we're building a model that is just a model for things that fit the model, or whether this is the model and you can apply it to any risk that you identify and manage on a portfolio
basis.
Yeah,
very clear. It's only on interest rate risk now.
Well,
Mary.
Okay. But you know, when you responded to Daryl's question, that's what I expected. But I think we have to be very clear about that because, for example, when you responded to Daryl's comments, you're like, well, we get questions because people say they manage things this way. And that just raises a question about how far will we expand to deal with anything that people say, well, I take a similar approach to managing this or that. And I can see that one might argue that whether you manage net interest margin on a gross or discounted basis, it's still net interest margin. But I think we have to be very clear about what it isn't. We're just illustrating it with net interest margin. We're saying that this is what the model is being built for. And I guess let me echo Sue's caution about the use of the word cash. She pointed to one paragraph, but just now you were saying, so we're looking at the cash profile. And I'm not sure it's the cash profile so much as the I'm not sure what you mean when you say cash profile, because presumably accrual accounting will be applied to the instruments. We're just talking about what their, contractual maturities are. So I'm kind of cautioned about the word cash.
Understood.
Francoise.
Thank you. In fact, I wanted to comment on that, paragraph 22 and what it means to me. I think when I look at the risk management strategy of a bank, I would remind us of the comment that some of us made the other day, last month, I think, on moving away from the banking book in any way, because in fact the risk management strategy applies to the full banking book. And I don't think that the risk management strategy is influenced by what comes to the income statement. I think the risk management strategy is in order to make sure that there is a net positive cash interest cash flow throughout the periods. So I think moving away from the notion of cash flow would, in my view, be what I would consider, but maybe I'm wrong because I'm certainly far from being expert there, but what I, from my understanding at present, moving away from cash flows to me would be a misunderstanding of what banks are trying to accomplish. So, and this is the reason why every time we will bring in a reference to or a limitation that stems out of the accounting requirements, I think we will be at odds with reflecting what banks are really doing.
It's a fair observation. I think what threw me in 22A is the italics say stabilised cash value of margin, and then the next sentence immediately says net of interest income and expense, which sounds like accounting. Mm-hmm. And so I think your point's fair from a risk management perspective, but I think we just need to be clear which one we mean.
Yep.
And it is also because it's cash flows that the present value may make sense.
And honestly, this one, we will take care. It's things, even when the banks are managing this, Francois, they are doing it on what is called a YTM or yield to maturity basis, which is nothing but the EIR concept. We won't have a conflict with that, but we will clear it here. You're absolutely, we shouldn't make that disconnect, that when you're bucketing, you are looking at cash. That's what it gets in things. We will make it clear.
Good luck squaring that circle. Gary?
Thank you. Good morning, and hello, yours. I thought a very well done paper for the people that wrote it. In general, I'm okay with the direction of this paper and the project more generally. But a lot of the things we write, it's not so much when things are going okay. It's we write standards for what do you do when something isn't going okay. So when I'm focusing on question one, this is. The target profile represent the objective management's working towards, and that presumably is tied into the risk management strategy, and I agree with that. But are we going to come to something, the boundaries about how frequently they can change things? Because things can change for two reasons. One, you just internally you change your profit objectives or whatever. But yesterday the Federal Reserve signaled a more aggressive increase in rates. So there's external factors. Hopefully never another financial crisis, but and even if you don't change your strategy, you can affect the way change by, securitizing out some of the assets, or settling some liabilities or refusing to originate certain types of liabilities. There's all sorts of ways to affect this, without saying I changed my strategy.
Yep.
I think we're planning on coming to that in time, but there's both internal, I just changed our mind. And then there's externally driven ones. You'd say, of course you had to change. It's not a change to the strategy. It's a reaction to external. And I think we need to spend a fair amount of time, on that in course. So that's not a question, more so than a comment.
Can I just come in? I think one thing I will request, keep reminding us about that things, when things are going good, it's not a problem. Yeah. How does it handle when things start going bad? We need to consider that. In a nutshell, Gary, you will get a whole paper on this. That's what I was talking about, some of what are the permissible strategies, what are structural changes when we can expect the risk profile to change, the target profile to change, and what are changes like We'll come to that. That's why I'm saying we're already going. You are ahead in the next step.
Okay, that's fine. Then we can wait to then, because there's certainly some rational changes in your strategy driven because of external factors.
And I think we are looking at something one now. If LIBOR actually gets changed, that's a major structural change in the market that will change this. There are also other things which we'll come to you with. You're talking about securitization. You can do that also with derivatives to move gains in and about. That will be a full thing. But yes, it's a very important point. Do put the peg in.
Okay, good. I have some of the questions for later on. So,
I agree with question one and the direction that you're taking us in the paper. A couple of people have mentioned this important underpinning the relationship between the liabilities and the asset profile and then coming into the target profile. I wonder if you might give us some diagrams that can be helpful because we need to see that picture. And you might... that then those diagrams can evolve as well, or little diagrams or charts or something. I think just to emphasise that point, that there is a relationship between liabilities, asset profile and target profile.
Yep, sure. Done. Absolutely.
Thank you. Chang-Wu?
Thank you. Just I agree with your view, but just a clarification. If you see paragraph 4, that's almost the same paragraph as paragraph 6. The first sentence that the target profile specifies the repricing dates. And the next one, it represents the objective. So I'm just wondering, because you are putting the repricing dates every first sentence of these two paragraphs. So I'm wondering, the target profile with this repricing dates is so important. So that's why you're putting the target repricing date first, and the next sentence you put there, this represents the objective of this draft. So could you explain why this is so important, the repricing dates with the target profile?
So if we're trying to stabilize the net of interest income and interest expense, then the best way to do that is to ensure that the assets and the liabilities will be impacted by a change in market factors at the same time. And so we're trying to align the repricing dates of the assets and the liabilities, the assets and the target profile. So it is very important. And so that's why we deliberately started with it in kind of a tell type method of, I'm going to tell you once, I'm going to tell you again, I'm going to tell you again. So it is very important.
Very important. I understand that debt repricing risk, reinvestment risk, in this dynamic risk management is so important, I understand. But however, the thing that specifies this repricing date, what dates, is seems to me a kind of that strategy rather than target profile. That's why I'm asking. This dynamic risk management strategy just specifies everything, mm-hmm. including the target profile, given the asset profile on financial liability, everything.
Yep.
So if you separate this concept into some subcomponents, so target profile, that has a role of the whole the picture of the strategy. So I'm just confused because, you know, if I see this paragraph, I would like to start with the second sentence. You know, this target profile represents the objective of something, mm-hmm. but its main function of this target profile is specified the repricing dates and some others. But I'm just, you know, would like to whether what underlying some kind of a reason why you put this repricing dates every in a first sentence in the paragraph.
I can put it in the second sentence.
If there's no good, you know, just some fundamental reason.
Both are important. We can't do one without the other.
Amara?
Thanks, Sue. Well, in summary, I do agree with the direction of the project, and particularly with the question one. I think you've heard a lot of comments about wording. I think they're all fair, and of course we should consider them. I have three comments on the target profile, and I didn't think like Anne on the diagram. I think the diagram is a good idea, but you have a footnote 3 on paragraph 12, that's exactly referred to the papers that we discussed a target profile. And what I realized is that, well, it was last year, May, June, and September. Maybe to facilitate the discussions in the future, add an appendix with the key concepts that we are talking about would be also easier to get with potentially the diagram that was suggested by Ian. The second is the paragraph 24. It's very simple and might be stupid, but sometimes it's how one reads. On the third sentence, we say the determination of the target profile should take into account the entity's risk management strategy. To me, it's stupid, but it would be more reasonable to say their risk management strategy will determine the target profile, because it's not really the opposite, right? The meaning is almost the same.
No, but the emphasis
makes a
different
huge difference to me. And the third comment is agreeing with the question and the direction. I guess I would refer to Gary's comment and the discussion we had last month, because the object we are here seeking to portray in the performance of the company the DRM objective of stabilizing net income, net interest rate. Naturally, to portray this correctly or completely, this would reflect perfectly the DRM. This would be the ideal. However, the tension we heard last week, and Gary comment on boundaries, and I mentioned last week discipline. So it's only a comment. I don't think we are discussing this here, but just to remind us that this will be a key aspect. Find the right balance of boundaries, discipline for accounting purpose that do not make this whole exercise unreasonable in terms of performance, but also gives the necessary discipline to provide some level of information that is really useful.
Martin?
Yeah, on paragraph 22, I'm now a little bit confused, because when I have read 22, that maybe some people have raised concerns because they thought if they manage their interest rate risk based on, I would assume, cash flows based on time buckets, that is only kind of qualifying criteria, but others doing that on a net present value basis, and they thought maybe they are excluded from the model. And that is the reason why we have included, as in paragraph 22. And my understanding is of 22, and nothing to do with accounting. That is okay. My understanding is that there are different ways how entities or banks manage their risk based on, as I said, present value or cash flows by time buckets or whatever. And that has to be then, I think, the driving force how they come to the target profile, because based on their results of their risk management strategy, they decide, okay, we have derivatives in this or whatever. And my understanding is, okay, that clearly this target profile has to be in line with the strategy of the risk management. And there are different ways. That is the only thing what we want to address here. Or is that wrong?
No, that's not. That's what will define the target profile. The accounting consequence of B is that, Martin, when we look at the difference between the target profile and the asset profile to determine what derivatives you need, you will have a different set of derivatives.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what
we're doing. Allowing that. It's different ways.
That's why I'm saying we will have to explore that. It's not something we can do. There are, as Daryl says, a different, I wouldn't say a wrinkle or anything, a different consequence that we need to consider. Right. That will be automatic, I would say, coming out of the model.
Yeah.
That difference, when you do it, you will have to layer another set of derivatives here, which will be required. Which will be required, yes.
But doesn't that mean that 22A is really about sort of periodic cash flows coming in over time, if you like? It's really, I think the words net interest income and expense are probably a bit...
A bit off.
Yeah. Because I think you're talking about periodic cash flows coming in over time, managing those versus a PV focus.
Yeah.
I don't think it's accounting at all in these paragraphs, which would solve my problem, because as long as it's clear that we're just talking cash.
Yeah, okay.
but avoiding those words net income and expense, which implies accounting.
Accounting.
I've tried very hard to stay away from the term net interest margin in these papers, but I perhaps should have used them in the
Excellent. Nick?
Yeah, so still on paragraph 22A as well, and taking the words that have just been expressed, so rather than talking about interest, income and expenses, the periodic cash flows, is it those we're seeking to stabilise, or is it the margin? Because they're different things. So the headline talks about stabilising the cash value of margins, whereas when we get into the text, this paragraph, it seems about stabilising the absolute number. So I'm not sure which we're actually targeting or which would be targeted within a bank. They're different things.
The focus is the net, and so the focus is of ensuring that the gross values will react in a symmetrical manner. Mm-hmm. So the focus is the net. Mm-hmm. But having said that, if I want the net to move, if I want the net to be stabilized, the gross has to be symmetrical. So
I understand that, but I could grow my asset base.
Yep.
And that might help me stabilize my absolute numbers.
Oh, but, you mean in isolation, net interest income?
Then I will have a margin consequence. It's use of the word margin compared to talking about...
I see where you're coming from. It is always the net focus we are going for, not for the
cost. It's not the margin. So just again, for some clarity.
No, it is the margin.
It is the margin.
The difference between the two.
That's not the same as the margin.
So let's pick
that's not the same. So the margin would be looking at net interest income, comparing that to the average level of assets. That's what a net interest margin
basis point
is commonly understood to be.
In terms of percentage.
Oh, no. Yeah.
It's percentage, yeah.
But that's not the same as stabilising the absolute amount. They're different things.
You're talking, I think, net of gross flows.
Yeah.
Yes.
The net of the gross flows, the absolute amounts.
I think the difference here is we're talking about a currency amount.
Yeah.
NIM is a currency amount.
Yeah.
Or is a NIM expressed as a percentage of something else, for example.
Okay.
And I guess that's commonly used language within would be margin would be your net interest income, which would be your monetary amount expressed as a percentage of your average assets.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we probably don't want to use the word. I think the word margin would create some confusion potentially.
Okay.
Mary.
I guess going back to the observations Martin was making about paragraph 22 and just let me add my support for thinking about what language we use on 22A even before I think about Nick's point, because when I was thinking back to the education sessions you'd done and thinking about what are, once we build in the hedging instruments that are used, what we're talking about is the cash, the interest payments on the liabilities, the interest income on the assets. And I think what we're talking about on the derivatives, I'm assuming for the moment that they're swaps, is the periodic payments to settle the, receive fixed, pay variable, pay variable, and vice versa. And that we're thinking about those settlement payments as part of the cash inflows, cash outflows that are the stabilization. Because going back to the education sessions in other meetings, you've laid out with the buildup of the information how those achieve the target repricing and therefore returns.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, I was trying to pick my word a bit carefully. Returns as if they were perfectly matched when actually it's the derivative that matches the liabilities and the assets in terms of term, length.
Yep.
So I think it is important to be thinking about the returns as payments rather than interest, because the cash settlements on the derivatives are not interest payments, although the purpose of the derivatives is to think of them as if they were in this context an adjustment of interest. So I think using vocabulary will avoid things, as Sue said, like that. Some of the questions that we had at the interpretation committee was considering about whether an element of change in fair value should be reported as if it were effective interest method interest.
Okay. So subject to some careful thinking on articulation when we work on the model, can I see a show of hands from the board on question one, so support for this target profile?
All in favour? So
13
in favour on that, given the given wording changes, we will clarify to proceed along these lines.
Okay. So now moving on to question two, the tenor focus. Do you want to tee up more, or are you happy just to open for the board?
The
question two?
Open it. Yeah. Open it for the board.
Yep. Okay, TAC.
Yeah. I think we should discuss question two and question three together rather than single out question two, because question three relating to the tensions, and I have a question on this question. You say that, the amount should be aligned, but not the tenants. So that means if you have a target profile of 5 years...
Yes.
...based on the risk management, but environment, judging from the environment, only the available asset is only 2 years, mm-hmm. then even in that case... You don't really care because even if the tenor is different, you can manage it by using derivatives. So therefore, you don't really care about the tenor. Is my understanding is correct?
That is correct.
So if you if only 2 years asset is available, so then what kind of derivative do you?
Fair question, Doug. To be complete, you cannot manage an asset profile of 2 years and a target profile of 5 years just using derivatives.
Yeah.
You have to bring in reinvestment of those 2 years' assets.
Yeah.
Without that, just with derivatives, you cannot manage the notional.
Yeah, rolling. That's the point.
So if you have an asset profile, which is 5 years, 2 years, and a target profile, which is five, that automatically means here's the interaction that comes in. Immediately, I'll say that part of your asset profile, you have designated and shown that you have reinvestment, which is highly probable.
Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, you can't do it. Absolutely fair question. You can't do it.
That is exactly the next point I want to discuss.
Yes.
Because it relates to the next question.
Mm-hmm.
So the time horizon of the risk management. So idea of having a time horizon which will affect the target profile basically comes from the management strategy idea of how you would run your bank. So if you have longer kind of budget commitment, or if you have a longer kind of planning, then you may have a longer target profile. And if you have a shorter management strategy, that means you have a shorter target profile. But the point is, in order to stabilize the net interest margin for the period you want to control, then you will create a target profile and as well as asset profile, which includes a reinvestment strategy. I think that is really good, and that really matches with the idea of management. So it's going to be a very good experiment as an accountant. However,
you're scaring scaring me.
I have at the moment is the purpose of the accounting is to make it transparent what is actually happening. So my fear is if you get this accounting as familiar to the management accounting, then there is a risk of masking, to pick up, to describe what is actually happening. Because, for example, in the first example, you only have 2 years asset, but you include some reinvestment after 2 years. But we don't know what is going to happen after 2 years. So you include some future transactions as well as growth.
So that not necessarily. With this case, it will be just reinvestment.
Yeah, reinvestment and the part of the growth. So that's the idealistic picture the management is you know, considering. However, question is, that is only future transaction. So this model may describe how management will manage and will control their budget or their control their management accounting, but it could mask some actual derivatives nature. So that is what I'm wondering. So therefore, that somebody pointed out what is the permissible
boundaries will be very important.
What is the permissible strategy, and what is the permissive combination of the target profile and the combination of the asset profile? That is what we need to discuss in the
we started to touch on that at the last board meeting when we were talking about the discipline about highly probable transactions and also the fact that we've got a bit of a novel idea in here, which is a highly probable transaction that will have particular accounting characteristics.
Yep. That results in SPPI.
And so I think we're going to have to circle back on more detail on those aspects.
This is the thing, what we will do. When we bring the target profile tuck, absolutely, we cannot avoid highly probable, and we don't. We allow that today in hedging. That's there. If you have a highly probable forecast, you can do it. What we need to circle back, and for that, the couple of things, and it's a very loose word which we have used, is trading strategies and things like that. But first, there are two elements to it, and we need to start thinking in two dimensions on this one. One, we have matched to notionals. You have to have your asset notional and your liability notional equal because of the same very simple logic. If you are going to invest in assets, somehow you have to fund it. We will consider equity later. That's not the point. But there's another dimension, the one you're indirectly mentioning, is the bucketing in time periods.
Yeah.
That also has significant implications that we need to explore when we come to the boundaries. I'll give you a very simple example. I have 1,000 of assets, 1,000 of liabilities, perfectly matched, no leverage. But when I put it in time buckets, is it okay to have 2,000 in one bucket and negative 1,000 in another bucket? I can easily do that with derivatives. These are things we need to explore to understand how consistent it is with the model we are trying to develop. So, yes, the boundaries will be a big discussion.
Nick?
Just trying to get my head around the issue of the notionals. So that the notionals would take into account both deposit growth and asset growth by definition, almost, I think. And here we're really talking about that by the time we get to the end of the risk management period, our notionals are exactly the same?
I think they should be the same all the time.
Right the way.
I think Nick is asking, are you asking notionals are starting, let's say I start my profile, asset profile and target profile, right? 1,000.
Yeah.
In the end, it will be 1,000.
Yeah.
But the buckets will not be exactly the same.
Yeah,
that's the tenure match.
So that's tenure against notional.
The tenure play. Okay. Absolutely.
So then the last thing is, I'm not sure, is alignment the right word?
It's come up. I think
whether equivalence is a better. I'm not sure about the answer, but alignment gave me a different sense. I would say.
Okay. One of the words also we used is consistent. When we mean equal, so let's use equal.
Okay.
Point taken. If you have any thoughts, let me know.
Daryl?
I was a little bit concerned about whether I was understanding correctly what Tuck was talking about. A part of what the solution, we talked about a little bit of the solution, I think, in terms of the control mechanisms in and out. But presumably a part of the solution may be disclosure. And I think it's because if I understand what Tuck's talking about, it's sort of we're back in the situation of saying, I can manage something but not hedge it. So the example that comes to me in emerging economies, you very often don't have instruments you can use to hedge something. So you simply need to know about it, but you can't really do anything about it. In the same way as I think what you're talking about is that I may have a 2-year time horizon or a 5-year time horizon. It doesn't mean I don't have known risk exposures beyond that. So presumably that's a part of what we'd be thinking about disclosing at the end is the, even if you don't apply hedge accounting, even if you don't apply the model, there is some information that people are going to need to just understand what you're not doing as opposed to what you are doing.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, Jin Chao.
Thank you. Just one question, relevant to Nick just mentioned about the term of align, but sometimes we use align, sometimes we use the consistency or consistent in the same paper.
I think we should just say the same. The notional should be the same.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the question is that I just want to confirm the notion should be 100% the same, or whether could it be, you know, certain specific portion of the notion. So, yeah, this is
the same. The question. It should be the same.
Should it be same? And secondly, because I'm not sure how they manage it in practice, because the asset profile, including those high probable, you know, the assets arising from the high probable events or transactions, mm-hmm. but the liability side, sometimes it's, we have no this kind of notion, something like that. So
no,
how to make 100% to align?
We do have the same notion with liabilities. If you're doing liability hedging, and it's a future transaction, it goes through the same requirements of being highly probable.
So you have
both
forecast future liability or some.
Yeah, the same
practice,
notion.
It works. I'm not sure. I just make sure the practice.
It works in practice.
To match your asset profile and the target profile 100%, those, especially with that notional. And the second, just following, because assets normally, sometimes the funding comes from liability, sometimes it comes from equity.
Yeah.
Because we are going to discuss the equity later. Yeah. But the funding, once the funding comes in, they mix. So we cannot identify, you know, which assets, which funding they support one specific asset or something. So whether, I'm just make sure 100% align, you know, we're currently thinking liability, you know, profile 100%, or whether liability and equity 100% aligned with assets profile. It's very general aligned, you know, requirement or just, so,
as of
now, the assets come from different channel of the funding. Yeah, they mix each other. So how can we match in practice?
We are not saying you have to match every single liability with which that liability is funding which asset. That's not the requirement. What we are saying in total, if you have 1,000 on the asset profile, you should have 1,000 on the liability profile. That's all.
But on the banking's balance sheet, all of assets, we cannot identify which assets come from which.
But we are not requiring it to be. We are not requiring it to be.
It's just a general.
It's two boxes.
It's two boxes.
Portfolio basis.
It's a portfolio.
We can't identify.
It's impossible.
So given the size of the portfolio that's eligible and the size of the portfolio they've chosen to manage, given that, the notional of that needs to match.
Yep.
The notional of the target profile.
Correct.
That's so we're not saying it has to be all of the assets and the bank, nor are we saying should it be all of the assets that meet the criteria. It's to the extent that they're managing them. That's the sort of idea you're working with?
Yes.
Sorry, Gary.
Yeah, thank you. Very quickly, just to think it's in the paper, I just want to make sure I understood it correctly. I mean, for every asset, there has to be a liability that funds it. Again, appreciating equity is sort of a special case, but so it's important the absolute amounts are the same all the way through. The tenor is unimportant because that's where the derivatives come in. It really is that simple.
Is that simple?
Not overcomplicated. You know, appreciate the mechanics might be difficult, but the principle is not hard.
All we are saying is your balance sheet should balance.
That's usually a good thing.
This isn't the whole balance sheet, though. That might confuse.
That's a thing.
Yeah, but
seriously,
But that rate, just a follow-on question: when we talk the financial liabilities, you know, so we talk core deposits, non-core deposits, and so. But it really is any sort of funding. It could be the Fed funds window, banks, overnights, borrowings between themselves, and I mean, it's really is. All the places you can find money. It's not just, you know, it's not just deposits and longer term funding. It's all the tools that banks typically use.
Everything, Gary.
Daryl.
Jin Cho just reminded me of something that I'd read in the paper, that and this is the middle of paragraph 27, which is blindingly obvious but hadn't been obvious to me until I read it. So it's just remember to highlight the point somewhere that if an asset growth is highly probable, it must be highly probable that I'm going to get the funding for that asset. That was the one point. The other one is just on this idea of the assets matching the liabilities. Because of the way some banks operate, what you've essentially got is the liabilities into a central pot and then out of the central pot to the assets.
Yep.
That means that there's not necessarily that direct line between, as Jen Chow said. So presumably the way we're thinking about aligning these notionals may well be on a proportional basis. So if 98% of my funding pool is used to fund these assets that are in the, I would say 98% of everything in the liability side.
That's the proportion of the designation that we discussed in the
asset profile. I don't need to be thinking about this liability and this liability and this liability all add up to the notional.
I think Sue, as Sue put it, what you have put in your asset profile pool, in your designation, and what you put in your target profile pool through your designation, which will come to, those notionals have to match.
And then the one other thing is just, I presume there are circumstances in which there are legitimate expectations that liabilities will grow.
Yes.
And that I would have to consider that as well. We focus a little bit on the growth on the asset side and matching that with the liabilities. But sometimes, for example, some core deposits are a consequence of a different account type that gives rise to those. And you're just a taker as far as that's concerned. You take those balances. So that comes into the thought process as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Just to, the same logic will apply, which we have spoken about in 27, Darrell. Yeah. If you're expecting growth, I'm also assuming if you're doing a DRM properly, you are expecting growth on your asset side and you're not sitting on the... If not, you'll have. I would like to see one of the assets, which is a cash pool on which you're earning nothing, but it has to match up because the cash has to be deployed somewhere.
Just want to focus on liability. Sorry, then, Anne, I'll let you in. I'm starting to get confused now. So, sorry.
Scares me.
The notionals of the asset profile and the target profile need to be the same. That's essentially saying that when I look at the notionals of my assets and my objective of what I want to transform the assets into, given the liabilities, they need to be matched. So it's really mainly about the assets that we're talking about, the match of the notionals here. The target profile, it's mainly on the assets.
Yeah.
Because even when we're talking about the five-year reinvestment, it's 2 years plus the reinvestment of the assets. You've got to get comfortable with the assets. It's the asset notional amount that's really driving this more than the liability part per se, right?
They cannot come up with a target profile without looking at the liabilities. Now, that is not possible.
It's impossible to do that.
It's impossible. You have always to consider the funding.
Yeah. Of course you have to consider it, but ultimately what we're... Because the target profile is anchored in what you want the assets to turn out to look like.
And that's driven by my liabilities.
Given the liabilities, but it's not a...
It's a gap analysis because I think you could do it both ways. I think you could argue
it doesn't matter which way you look at it.
You argue equally that you're trying to convert your liabilities to look like your assets. It's just common practice to think about it the other way because you've got more control over the type of assets.
We can say is the other one way or the other because depending on the jurisdiction you are operating, you might have even a more stable asset profile. It's not expected because of the matching or mismatch, but you might have an asset side that's eventually more stable than the other side. So I think the important to me is to have the notion clear.
Well, I think you have to consider the liability side, but I think, Anne, maybe you can... Shed light. You were nodding.
I think why I was nodding, Sue, was I think at this point we're talking about we've arrived at an asset profile that we're matching with the target profile, completely recognising the points that have been made that asset profile has to be reflect the liabilities, the underlying liabilities. Paragraph 31, we've changed the word align to be the same, so we're saying that the notional amount of the asset profile and the target profile should be, so the preliminary view of the board is that they should be the same. Do we mean that they should be, or they must be, or they will always be? I mean, I think the way our conversation's gone is that it's not that they should be, it is that they will be. So I'm just wondering if should's the right word, should we be saying they must be?
It's required to be.
Is required to be. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Sorry, Mary?
On this point of confusion, because I was starting to get sucked into the confusion too, is I'm wondering, I'm kind of looking at Martin when I said to see if I pass, is I'm thinking of it as you identify your liabilities. Having identified the liabilities that are the pool, for your risk management activity, you then express the target profile as the mirror image of the liabilities. And then the asset profile is what's compared to the target profile, and those are the two total amounts of notionals that have to match.
Yep.
And I think the question or the suggestion I have for keeping this in kind of baby steps and understanding what is decisions versus what is how we choose to express things is, if we start out saying you have to manage it, you have to be not just talking about it as, but looking at it as the asset profile, understanding that your target asset profile is driven by your liability profile, but say you have to, and then have a question at some point in this project that says, does this model apply if you express it as, if you express your target and what you're seeking to manage as liabilities instead of assets? And just start out with the simple one. If the typical thing to do is to talk about managing your assets, then let's say that's the way you've got to be approaching it, and then we'll come back and look at to say can you express it and convey it as managing your, let's say, for example, your liability in the scenario that Amaro just talked about, so that we can pause and think about whether there'd be anything different if we were expressing it that way. But let's start out with an assumption that we're only looking at people who manage their asset profile versus the target asset profile.
That, I don't think it'll make a difference, Mary. We will express it, but I don't want to change the objective, because the objective is always looking at the net. If I change it just all of a sudden to just managing the asset profile, it is a major change, which will be consequent. I know what you're talking about. It's where we anchor this, whether we anchor it with the asset profile or the target profile. We can work on that. It really doesn't matter.
It wasn't so much whether we anchor it on the asset profile or the target profile. I think the anchor is the target profile. Mm-hmm. And I accept and agree with your point. We struggled with it on the previous question about expressing the management of the, I'll call it the spread in, this case. And I'm not trying to change that either. But I think we're starting out with an assumption that you're pursuing that management of the spread via target asset profile versus actual asset profile. And there may be scenarios in which somebody says, in my market, because my asset base is maybe more stable and it's the liabilities, I actually use my asset profile to, my actual assets to determine my target liability profile, and I manage a target liability profile. Let's pause and look at that later and separately. If we say the norm is the,
but I actually think, reflecting on this, one of the reasons why the staff may be anchoring with the assets is because of our own hang-ups. Because for us to talk about transforming the assets is much easier, at least based on history, than us talking about doing things like transforming exposure on core deposits, where the risk management perception versus the accounting perception are very different. Yeah. Is that fair?
Yes. Absolutely. That's why we started with the asset profile. It's more.
But that's what I was saying. Let's start with it, and then when we get to a point where we can consider that, whether it's any differences at our hang-ups or is it,
explore it, Mary.
Do that rather than just kind of saying, well, we're just expressing this way, but of course it could be the mirror image.
Nick?
Thank you. I'm just seeking to get some more clarity around about how we deal with liability growth. So if you bear with me, we have a relatively simple bank, which is, say, a one-country bank, and effectively it brings in liabilities, and they're fungible across its various lines of business. And I think a while ago we talked about you designate a proportion of those in terms of that forming your target portfolio. We have not discussed that, but just I think that's
now I'm just thinking when you mentioned in passing.
Yeah, indeed. Thank you. So if you have liability growth, would you change that proportion, or would you do what Kumar suggested, that you'd then expect to see a cash asset if you didn't have the asset growth? Am I going too far ahead?
I hate to give you this answer, that I would like to discuss the designation of the qualifying criteria on the target profile and how it work in the dynamic nature in the next April board meeting, as I said in my introduction.
That's fine.
So given all of those discussions, can we vote on question two? And I'll try rewording it. Two first. Let's do two first. So does the board agree with the preliminary staff view, and I'm going to reword it so make sure you're happy with it, that the notionals of the asset profile and the target profile are required to be the same but not the tenor?
Yeah. And Tom? All in favour? 14.
Okay. And I think we can vote on question three unless anybody had something else they wanted to raise. So does the board agree with the preliminary staff view that the time horizon of the target profile is the period of time over which the entity is managing the net of interest income and expense?
All in favour? Okay, 14.
Yeah, man, I only have some concerns. Maybe the risk management strategy is not that they're saying they manage the net interest income and expense. Maybe they express it in a different way, but what they mean, I think I agree with that, but
we need to do the wording. Yeah. Make it consistent with the previous wording.
Exactly, yeah.
But otherwise you are in agreement, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The entity is managing.
Yeah. So well done, guys. Okay, with that, I think we're going to take a short break.
If there's no questions then to the board about laddering and other matters, but if there are comments or questions from the board, then I'm happy to, or the staff are happy to take them.
Nick?
So one quick question, just trying to think how laddering fits into the whole dynamic risk management. So to me, laddering is simply about changing the profile of the asset portfolio. So it brings that element of diversification, which is in its own right risk mitigation. So if an entity was just to do laddering alone,
yes,
are existing, because you've not got that issue of the core deposit to think about in that respect, so we wouldn't have the problem that we're facing in terms that we're trying to solve today. Existing accounting would be able to deal with laddering in isolation because we're not having to think about...
If you could force customers to give you loans that matched your ladder.
But I think Nick is asking a more subtle question, which I will tread with a bit of caution. Okay. I think what Nick is asking is that in the absence of core deposits, a bank is doing laddering. Mm-hmm. Can it reflect that laddering using existing hedge accounting provisions?
Yes. Yeah.
That would get me into interpreting it. Depends on how you have done it.
Okay.
There are options there, but not necessarily always.
Okay.
Not necessarily always. Okay. It's a big question on asset transformation.
Okay. Thank you.
Daryl?
Yeah, that was the question I thought.
Real pedantic comment about a use of a specific word. So in paragraph 50, when you talk about the fact that there are that banks will likely have multiple different target assets, you start out by saying the staff acknowledge that, which I take almost as a negative connotation in the context of the model. We've got all those great plans, but we acknowledge that there's this problem. Now, I don't know if I think of it that way. I think of it it's the way it's managed. It's a given. It's what should be happening.
I don't think we meant a negative term by the word acknowledge. Mm.
We will take it. Noted.
Mary.
Some circumstances. A confirmation of something that I think is obvious, but I just want to check it, and a question that I think probably relates to future discussions. The confirmation of the obvious, is if we think core deposits, if core deposits are viewed as perpetual life, then bucketing them, as you have illustrated in this laddering section, is totally a matter of management designation. It's not based on you have to do an analysis of the characteristics of the core deposits to determine what is core and what is not. but having determined that X is core, kind of the definition of core, mm-hmm. is, I don't know if it's perpetual, and maybe we should think about whether we mean it's perpetual or whether we just mean it has a life substantially in excess of whatever the managed time horizon is. You know, and so, but be explicit that the bucket, the putting it into time buckets is a matter of management designation.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah, and it's very clear.
Okay. It seems pretty clear, but I think it's just stating that. And the second, and this is what I think is probably for another day, but I want to flag it. In paragraph 49, you start raising the issue of tolerance for variations in the target profile. And while I can imagine that you might not, that an entity might not achieve perfect transformation of the actual to the target mm-hmm. profile, I start getting concerned when, in effect, there's, I'll call it over-hedging, you know, coming in as opposed to under-hedging, and that we maybe have to look at those two differently in terms of whether we have a symmetrical or an asymmetrical tolerance for variation. Is that correct, that we will look at
them? We will discuss that at a future time.
Okay.
Performance, yes. Okay. And we have already flagged that.
Okay. I just wanted to ask because it was kind of raised and then we ran from it in paragraph 49. Mm-hmm.
We don't want to get a tolerance also, especially in the model context of cash flow hedging. That becomes all the more critical because you don't. It is an asymmetric model, cash flow hedging.
Okay. Well done, guys.
Okay.
So should we break till 10:30?
Okay.
Thursday, Wednesday.